live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to begin with a special, original, in-depth investigative report. This was compiled with our scholars in research, Dr. Nancy Ashley and Richard Gale, and myself. This is posted online, will be followed by a report from called Herd Immunity, The Three Reasons Why I Don't Vaccinate My Children, Why Vaccine Supporters Shouldn't Care, from Shane Ellison. That will be followed by a report from Keeping It From the Parents, What the Government Does Not Tell You About Vaccinations. And this came from a parents group that was able, with freedom of information, to get 30 years worth of government documents that shows that the standard public vaccine program in Great Britain was a problem. They knew it was a problem. They specifically knew the MMR vaccine was a problem. Yet they hid all this. Instead, when one scientist suggested a relationship between the MMR vaccine and a group of children all manifesting specific types of gastrointestinal disturbances, that physician, Dr. Henry Wakefield, was excoriated, attacked, both in the British and the American media, specifically by Anderson Cooper, Dr. Gupta, and then lost his medical license. You'll be hearing on an upcoming program from the latest on that, and the fact that the co-defendant with Dr. Wakefield fought and won complete exoneration on all levels from the highest court in England. Dr. Wakefield's now in the process of doing that. You'll also be hearing some filmed interviews, the audio portion for a new documentary I'm preparing. Louise Habakkus. Louise is a leading educator advocate, parent. She has had vaccine-related injuries to her own child and now is educating other parents of what they should know. Also, Dr. Tony Bark. She is a physician. She is a relentless scholar looking into every aspect of vaccination. And she also will address herd immunity. And then finally, probably the finest scholar scientist in North America. She is a research fellow. She is Dr. Lucia Tomanovich, and she is an immunologist. She's written original reports based upon original science on what happens with the adjuvants like aluminum that are in all the vaccines inside the brain. And she's been able to show how damaging they are individually and then when they're used with other of these ingredients. So she'll be talking about adverse reactions. My original report is about Gardasil. I would like for you to think on these issues. Do you find something seriously wrong with this scenario? In late 2009, reports of faulty gas pedals and obstructive floor carpets and failing brakes in Toyota and Lexus vehicles generated uproar across major media networks. And during a four-year period beginning in 2006, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration had reported 5 deaths, 17 injuries, and 13 crashes, and an additional 29 deaths between 2000 and 2005. There was no hesitation among the networks and the federal officials to demonize Toyota for knowingly risking the lives of people solely to empty its dealership lots. Even Congress quickly called for a congressional investigation, and Toyota took upon itself the responsibility to recall over 8 million vehicles. At the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration meetings, collecting crash data on Toyota and all their lemons, the Centers for Disease Control Vaccines Adverse Events Reporting System database was gathering casualty data following vaccination with Merck's human papillomavirus vaccine, Gardasil. And it was clear that Merck was far ahead in winning its race against Toyota for the Lemon of the Decade Award. Using data from the CDC, the Vaccine Watch organization, SaneVax, determined that since Gardasil's launch in 2006, until just recently, the human papillomavirus vaccine has been linked to more than 121 deaths, 27,485 medical injuries of young girls, and some as young as 11-year-old, and now young boys as well. Unfortunately, vaccine injuries are not documented nearly as quickly and thoroughly as automobile accidents and deaths. There are no vaccine police rushing to the scene of vaccine accidents to investigate the incidents and to record injuries and fatalities accurately. Consequently, only a fraction of vaccine adverse events reported by pediatricians and physicians and medical clinics and hospitals make their way to the federal government's adverse vaccine database. Few parents even know such a reporting system even exists. Gardasil, the human papillomavirus vaccine produced by Merck, was brought to market with great fanfare and widely proclaimed as the first ever anti-cancer vaccine. Merck created a market for Gardasil out of thin air with deceptive and dishonest advertising, and therefore planted fear in the minds of consumers, fear of an enormous yet unknown health crisis, an invisible time bomb waiting to explode and harm women everywhere. Whereas most vaccines and drugs undergo several years of clinical testing, including human trials, prior to FDA approval, Gardasil was on the FDA fast-track approval and underwent a mere 6 months of trial research. When criticized for their aggressive marketing, Merck countered that they were performing a public service by raising awareness about the human papillomavirus and weren't selling anything, really. This lie became public as Merck was caught lobbying the 50 states for mandatory Gardasil vaccination before it had even secured FDA approval. The fact is that there was never, ever, ever a need for Gardasil in the first place. Regular Pap testing has already lowered the incidence of cervical cancer by 80% in the United States to a few thousand cases a year, and the vast majority of all human papilloma infections resolve, disappear, go away in a person's body of their own accord. But by lining the pockets of such groups as women in government, and of course the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, Merck was able to influence legislation such that almost immediately after the vaccine was approved, it was put on the vaccine schedule recommended for all girls. If it hadn't been for Governor Rick Perry's blunder of trying to mandate Gardasil for school attendance in Texas in the face of a huge conflict of interest and a $50 million contribution to his presidential campaign, Gardasil might have gone even further. There is something deeply wrong with a giant pharmaceutical company spending hundreds of millions of dollars to manipulate women and influence legislation in order to generate a revenue stream of billions of dollars a year for themselves at the expense of a gullible public. What is wrong with Gardasil isn't just that it is unnecessary. Gardasil is possibly the most dangerous vaccine on the market, with the potential to injure, maim, or even kill the children who receive it. The program of coercion to vaccinate every 11 to 26-year-old girl from Gardasil is relentless. This vaccine is given not just in doctors' offices, where doctors have been known to fire non-compliant patients, but in schools and colleges, where the pressure on girls and their parents to conform can be extreme. These institutions all have quotas, sometimes including financial rewards, and they are anxious to prove high rates of compliance. But there is no informed consent prior to vaccination, so most of these girls and their parents have no idea what they're risking by agreeing to vaccination with Gardasil. And while Merck and the FDA and the CDC and the medical establishment all deny that there have been serious life-altering adverse events associated with Gardasil, the fact is that compared with the mandated vaccines, which are given with greater frequency, Gardasil still has the most adverse events reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of any vaccine. And since reporting of adverse events is not mandatory in the U.S., although outbreaks of so-called vaccine-preventable illnesses are, it is likely that only 10% even get reported. But what the victims of Merck's war on the cervical cancer should know, they have not been told. Alexis Wolf was a normal seventh grader in 2007. She had type 1 diabetes, but had successfully learned how to give herself insulin shots and eventually graduated to an insulin pump, which she also mastered easily. Alexis made the honor roll for the first time that year and was rewarded with a trip to Germany over the summer to visit her grandparents. Her endocrinologist believed that the diabetes was under control and felt that Alexis would be perfectly capable of making the trip on her own and managing her diabetes herself. To make sure everything was in order prior to the travel, Alexis' doctor recommended she receive her first Gardasil vaccine. The trip went well, but Alexis seemed different to her mother when she returned, perhaps a bit distant. Alexis received her second Gardasil vaccine after coming home, and shortly thereafter her personality changed entirely. For a relatively shy girl, Alexis immediately became very gregarious, hugging everyone all the time. But she also became agitated and troubled and started having difficulty keeping food down. It reached the point where she threw up a number of times a day, which is especially dangerous for a diabetic. There began a series of appointments with many, many doctors. The general practitioner, the endocrinologist, the cardiologist, the gastroenterologist, and the number of different diagnostic tests. But nothing they did or recommended seemed to help. Alexis was struggling to get through her days, usually carrying a bucket with her all the time just in case she vomited. She had terrible insomnia, was eating excessively, and was falling further and further behind in school. In January 2008, Alexis received her third Gardasil shot. Within 2 weeks, she was in the hospital. Her behavior had worsened to the point where she was considered bipolar, and she was put on a series of antipsychotic medications. Her mother didn't believe that this was a psychological problem. She knew that something else had to be wrong, knew that there had to be some medical explanation for what was going on. After weeks and months in and out of different hospitals, with no improvement and her condition growing more desperate, Alexis at long last was seen by a doctor who recognized that she was having seizures, something all the previous doctors and all their tests had overlooked. This led to more tests, EEGs, MRI imaging, and spinal taps, and finally, a conclusion that seemed to make sense. Encephalitis, traumatic brain injury, and seizure disorder. But why? Alexis' mother had an additional conclusion which was so crystal clear in hindsight. Her daughter was normal before she received the Gardasil vaccine and had worsened with each one. The Gardasil vaccine had left Alexis with brain damage. We spoke with Tracy Wolf, Alexis's mother, about this ordeal, and while maintaining a cheerful optimism, Tracy admitted that she could never have foreseen how their lives would be changed completely. After Alexa's seizure disorder was identified and she was put on anti-seizure medication, her physical symptoms improved to a certain extent, but she was completely altered. Alexis had deteriorated from being a normal child to one who is only functioning at a fourth grade level. Forced in her special education instead of rejoining her previous class, Alexis became enormously frustrated in school and became an ordeal for everyone. Since Alexis turned 18, Tracy finally gave up and pulled her out of school, realizing that it really could not offer Alexis anything but misery. The stress on their family has been enormous. The pressure caused the Wolf's marriage to dissolve, and Tracy's now raising both their daughters by herself, with her father living in a different state. Alexis needs almost constant supervision, and Tracy can only leave her alone for short periods of time. They've applied for special services that could possibly be helpful, but the waiting list is long. Alexis doesn't understand why things are so different, why their little sister is learning to drive, but she can't. Unlike other types of injuries, a vaccine injury cannot simply, well, it cannot be identified immediately, and you can't just sue the company responsible once you determine that the vaccine was the problem. Since 1986, every single case of vaccine injury must be brought to the Office of Special Master at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, commonly called the Vaccine Court. This court was established to create a non-adversarial situation in which children injured by vaccines could receive compensation. But the Department of Health and Human Services has completely distorted the intent of this legislation and turned it into a highly adversarial proceeding. Injuries listed on a table are supposed to be automatically compensated, but they have removed a lot of injuries from the table over the years and have listed new vaccines such as Gardasil with no specific injuries attributable to the vaccine. So the burden is 100% on the victim to prove causation because there is no presumption of any injury. In conversation with William Ronan, a lawyer retained by Alexis' family, he shared that his law firm currently is handling 15 Gardasil cases that are being evaluated and another 6 cases already filed in the vaccine court. Interestingly, out of all the types of Gardasil-related injuries, the cases Ronan represents all fall into 2 categories, autoimmune and neurological. When the injuries are neurological, doctors frequently can't put their finger on what's wrong and end up sending the girls to a psychiatrist. Ronan maintains that it is impossible for all these girls suddenly to have developed mental problems or simply to be imagining that they have been harmed since receiving the Gardasil vaccine. While not anti-vaccine himself, he has seen too many girls have serious adverse reactions to Gardasil. He runs a 2-person law firm in Kansas City and without advertising has received at least 30 calls regarding Gardasil injury. Ronan believes his experience is just the tip of the iceberg. Anyone actually advertising legal services for Gardasil victims would be inundated with a huge number of cases. The work is slow going. Evidence of harm caused by vaccines is crucial, but there aren't a lot of published medical studies about safety to back up this claim. Those that exist are funded by, you guessed it, the manufacturer, and of course tend to be overly favorable to the vaccine. Possibly the strongest argument against Merck, according to the lawyer, is that failure to warn girls of the risks involved when getting the Gardasil vaccine. Merck clearly knew that this drug could cause neurological dysfunction, yet did not adequately address this in the product insert. Also, it is well known that girls who already have a human papilloma virus infection are more likely to be harmed by the vaccine. But the manufacturer does not make this clear and does not recommend testing. Ronan summed up his view of vaccinating young girls with Gardasil. Quote, "The real issue is, what is the benefit of this vaccine? Do the benefits outweigh the risks? There is a risk of seizure disorder or an autoimmune disorder versus the benefit that it might reduce cervical cancer. But Gardasil does not eliminate the need for regular pap testing, which is already safe, and there isn't good evidence that it prevents cervical cancer, meaning Gardasil. In evaluating risk and benefit, when all the facts are known, it becomes a pretty easy decision. The vaccine is more dangerous than any benefit. Unfortunately, medical professionals tend to read and listen to information provided by the manufacturers or their attractive sales representatives, the best and brightest, the ones most likely to put on a smile, to buy a doctor or their doctor's staff a free lunch, and therefore be easy on the eyes, which doesn't adequately present the risks involved. So they actually are sufficiently informed to adverse patients and to advise the patients on adverse effects, and they're not doing it. His own daughter had to fight off an aggressive attempt by her doctor to get the Gardasil vaccine. So he understands the pressure the girls are under to just go along instead of asking questions. We interviewed Dr. Meryl Nass, a board-certified internal medicine practitioner and vaccine specialist, who agrees that Gardasil was rushed to market without adequate safety testing. 3 years after approval for girls, the company likewise received approval to vaccinate boys ages 9 and above with no new studies and very little data to justify this action. Here's what Dr. Nass says. Children don't usually die suddenly when they are healthy, but there are certainly lots of teenage girls who have died relatively suddenly after Gardasil or developing severe neurological reactions. Therefore, if you're going to try to balance safety and efficacy when you prescribe something like a vaccine, you have to know how effective it's going to be. Does this really prevent cervical cancer in young women? And does it prevent it in women who have already been exposed to these viruses? So I don't know how other doctors prescribe something like Gardasil. Basically make an assumption that since the FDA has licensed it, the manufacturer would only market something that's safe. Doctors go ahead and prescribe. And what they may not be aware of is that it's extremely hard to link a side effect to a vaccine for many reasons. Getting a judgment against the manufacturer is very difficult and has become more difficult due to some recent litigation that reduced manufacturers' liability for vaccines in general. Gardasil's doctrine is already so entrenched after only 6 years that it's a formidable task to challenge the official story that is, this vaccine is safe and effective because the truth is too unsettling. The remarkable claims of Gardasil's benefits to women in the war on cancer are full of holes and not supported by any good science, even that science funded by Merck itself. It is important to deconstruct the falsehoods and half-truths that masquerade as facts about Gardasil. First, there is no human papillomavirus health crisis. Cervical cancer in the United States has been at record lows for the past 20 years. Currently, only an estimated 3,600 women die of cervical cancer each year. Yes, that's 3,600 that shouldn't die. But put it in perspective, the spectacular success in lowering the death rate from cervical cancer, that can only be attributable to the annual pap screening. I'll give you perspective. Between 1955 and 1992, deaths from cervical cancer declined 74% and continued to decline annually by 4%. Part of the success of pap screening lies in the fact that cervical cancer, unlike most other cancers, is very slow growing. With screening, there's ample opportunity to catch and successfully treat cervical cancer before it gets out of hand. It would be unlikely, then, that any further treatment to improve upon this already very low rate of cervical cancer death. When government officials and vaccine advertising make wild claims of high death rates associated with cervical cancer, according to a person you're going to hear in a moment or two, the leading neuroscientist in the field, Dr. Lucia Tominovich at the University of British Columbia, 88% of these deaths occur in developing countries like India and in Africa that don't offer pap smear screening programs. But you wouldn't know that by watching the ads. You'd be led to believe, well, you mean it's reduced the rate of cervical cancer deaths by 88% in the United States? But it doesn't. It hasn't. So they've misguided the entire issue. Human papillomavirus infection does not usually lead to cancer, but they don't tell you that. It is estimated that virtually all women in the United States experience a series of human papillomavirus infections throughout their lifetimes. Let me repeat that. All women. What the makers of Gardasil try to hide is the well-documented fact that over 90% of all human papillomavirus infections go away of their own accord within 2 years without causing any disease and with no treatment or intervention of any kind. Also, Gardasil does not prevent cancer. The endpoint of all the efficacy studies for Gardasil was not, in fact, prevention of cancer. Researchers couldn't actually assess the development of cervical cancer following the vaccine because this process normally takes up to 40 years, and their study stopped at just 5. So instead, Merck scientists decided that the presence of atypical cervical cells was a valid surrogate endpoint or substitute for cancer. Well, it is not. They use this hypothesis despite the fact that there is no evidence that these types of cervical lesions chosen as their endpoint would eventually lead to cancer. Merck has never acknowledged that their entire premise for the efficacy of Gardasil rests on pure, non-scientific speculation. In fact, many if not most atypical cervical cells resolve on their own without intervention. Also, contrary to what you'll hear in the state legislatures, Gardasil is not, I repeat, not 98% effective at preventing high-grade cervical lesions. Results of Merck's efficacy study published in a 2007 article of New England Journal of Medicine claimed that Gardasil is 98% effective at preventing high-grade cervical lesions. Subsequently, Merck and the CDC have lowered that figure to 70%. But the article itself reveals that Merck manipulated the data by excluding women and girls who did not follow the exact protocol. When all women in the study were considered, vaccine efficacy dropped to 44%. But even those numbers only actually reflect cervical lesions associated with the human papilloma virus 16 and 18. When Merck looked at Gardasil's ability to prevent all cervical lesions, Gardasil was only 17% effective. Again, their definition of effective rests solely on the unfounded assumption that certain types of cervical lesions turn into cancer. More damning is Merck's own acknowledgement that in their controlled studies, a percentage of girls actually developed serious cervical lesions following the Gardasil vaccine. The vaccine seemed to cause the most lesions in girls with pre-existing human papillomavirus 16 and 18 infections, but also in girls who had no pre-existing human papilloma infections. At least the very minimum should be done is examine everything with real scholarship. Screening girls with human papillomavirus 16 or 18 infections would give human papillomavirus positive girls the chance to avoid developing cervical lesions by declining the vaccine. Yet not only does Merck not recommend testing for human papillomavirus prior to vaccination with Gardasil, they actually discourage this practice, presumably so as not to draw attention to the danger. Anything to maintain the fantasy that this is a safe and effective vaccine. Gardasil also does not prevent human papillomavirus. Gardasil is designed to prevent only 4 human papilloma strains, 16 and 18, which can cause cervical cancer, and 6 and 11, which can cause genital warts. However, did they tell you that there are 150 other types of human papillomaviruses, at least 15 of which can cause cancer? And Gardasil provides no protection against these other strains? Does Merck's so-called consumer education even mention any of this? Of course not. Why would you have your daughter vaccinated if you knew the protection was so limited? Vaccinating prepubescent girls with Gardasil will not protect them against human papillomavirus or cervical cancer, despite the sanctimonious advertising, which suggests that both mothers and daughters can empower themselves through Gardasil. Merck's own studies show that the vaccine is only effective for 5 years. So if your 11-year-old daughter gets the Gardasil vaccine, it will have stopped working by the time she's 16. But since Merck doesn't give out this information voluntarily, these girls and their mothers will be in the dark. Gardasil vaccination does not eliminate the need for annual pap screening. In portraying Gardasil as a treatment that will prevent 98% of cervical cancer, the strong implication is that vaccinated girls will no longer be at risk of cervical cancer at all. As we have already seen in Finland, this can lead to the false assumption there is no longer a need for annual pap testing. When women in Finland stopped getting pap screening, cervical cancer increased 4 times the incidence in only 5 years. This complacency about risk started and fostered by Gardasil advertising is also likely to lead to an actual increase in cervical cancer in the United States as more females receive the vaccine and stop taking actions that have been proven to be protective. There is no evidence that Gardasil is effective in boys at preventing genital warts and anal cancer. Merck's study of human papillomavirus vaccine efficacy in males, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, states that Gardasil is 89% effective against genital warts and 75% effective against anal cancer. Given the fact there are approximately 300 annual deaths from anal rectal cancer among men in the United States, and these are not boys, one wonders how Merck was able to prove such a huge reduction in such a rare pop problem. As with the female group, external lesions substituted for actual cancer with no proof that lesions of that type actually lead to cancer at all. Yet Merck's statistics regarding their cancer substitute listed in their appendix to the article show that in men who did not have human papillomavirus prior to vaccination, both the vaccinated group and the placebo group had the same number of these types of lesions, making the observed efficacy of Gardasil minus 99% or 98%. And with human papillomavirus strain 18 related genital lesions, there were actually more lesions in the vaccinated group than in the placebo group. So as to the previous study, Merck's impressive numbers for the efficacy of Gardasil in men can only be attained by excluding 1/4 of the study participants. When everyone is included and all outcomes assessed, the efficacy drops to 0. So how would this look? Get a very risky vaccine. There's 0 chance that you'll be helped. Well, no one would get it. But then the most important issue, Gardasil is not safe. Most significantly, Gardasil has been associated with an unacceptable number of serious life-altering adverse events following vaccination. According to World Health Organization data, the rate of serious adverse reactions reported to the official vaccine adverse reporting system is 250% higher than the current age-adjusted death rates from cervical cancer. According to an evaluation performed by SaneVax of the 75 FDA-approved vaccines, the human papillomavirus vaccine accounts for 60% of the entire adverse database reporting. This includes 64% of all reported deaths, 65% of life-threatening reactions, an additional 82% of all cases of permanent disability for women under 30 years of age is attributable to the human papillomavirus vaccine. Adverse reactions include seizures, anaphylaxis, paralysis, transverse myelitis, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, and other types of serious problems neurologically. brachial neuritis, loss of vision, also tachycardia syndrome, facial palsy, deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, chronic fatigue syndrome, blindness, pancreatitis, speech problems, short-term memory loss, miscarriage, multiple sclerosis, autoimmune disorders, abnormal pap smears, and even cervical cancer. Yes, you heard me correctly. The federal government reports 62 cases of cervical cancer following the vaccination with Gardasil. Also, while Merck has not made pregnancy a contraindication for Gardasil vaccination, recent data released by the federal government reveal that Gardasil is by far the most dangerous vaccine to receive full amounts of while pregnant, having caused a reported 26,000 adverse reactions in just 6 years compared to the next most dangerous vaccines given to pregnant women, the flu vaccine, which has caused 200 adverse events over the 20 years. Gardasil vaccination, while pregnant, has also been associated both with frequent miscarriage and a high rate of birth defects. But most tragically is the tally of deaths due to the human papilloma vaccine, which is now approaching 125. There is strong biological evidence that Gardasil is associated with encephalopathy, autoimmune disorders, and death. Cindy Bevington, who I've interviewed for this piece, has investigated and reported on Gardasil extensively. And she remarked about the hundreds of emails she received from girls, mothers, and doctors around the U.S. and other countries expressing their serious misgivings about the human papilloma vaccine. Often she receives requests from parents begging for help because their pediatricians and physicians refuse to report their doctor's adverse events as vaccine-related. By the CDC's own admission, only 10% of adverse events get listed by the federal government. Even this very conservative figure has been refuted by independent analysis. Actual records show as little as 1% of all actual negative reactions for any given vaccine. It is therefore realistic to suspect that Gardasil is associated with anywhere from hundreds of thousands to millions of adverse effects among vaccinated girls and young women. Starting in mid-2011, discoveries about hidden Gardasil ingredients and the biological mechanisms contributing to the high rate of adverse events went public. First blood samples from a 13-year-old girl who developed acute juvenile rheumatoid arthritis within 24 hours after receiving Gardasil injection was analyzed. In fact, the DNA from a human papillomavirus infection will reside in the bloodstream only for a short period of time. What was so alarming in this case is that the girl's blood was drawn 2 years after vaccination. The head researcher, Dr. Sin Hang Lee in Connecticut, discovered the presence of the human papillomavirus DNA. However, what was more startling is that this was no ordinary DNA from a wild or clinical human papillomavirus strain. Instead, this was genetically engineered human papillomavirus DNA that was designed to firmly attach to the vaccine's aluminum adjuvant, contrary to Merck's package insert, stating, quote, no viral DNA in the vaccine, which Merck promptly removed after Dr. Lee went public with his finding. According to Dr. Lee, quote, based on medical literature and some of the FDA Merck's own publications, coming out from the outside source, DNA in an injectable protein-based vaccine may increase the risk of autoimmune disorders and gene mutation, which may lead to malignancies, end quote. In short, boys and girls receiving Gardasil are being injected with biohazardous material. The controversy over the safety of Gardasil took a major turn in 2012 when parents of two unrelated teenage girls who believe their daughters died from the human papillomavirus vaccine, had the coroner send brain tissue samples to Dr. Chris Shaw and Dr. Lucia Tominovich of the University of British Columbia's Neurodynamics Research Group for investigation. Neither girl of these girls had a history of previous medical conditions or drug use. One was 14-year-old Caucasian Canadian, the other was 15-year-old New Zealander and Moray descent. The only thing held in common was they both received Gardasil vaccines. Prior autopsy analysis showed no signs of brain inflammation that could be attributable to sudden neurological death. The University of British Columbia's finding, published in the peer-reviewed journal Pharmaceutical Regulatory Affairs, was shocking. In all the brain tissue specimens provided to the researchers, it was discovered that the vaccine's human papillomavirus 16L1 antigen from the human papillomavirus had penetrated the blood-brain barrier of the teenagers, thereby triggering an autoimmune reaction that affected the brain's cerebral vasculature and led to brain-blood vessel hemorrhaging. In other words, the antigens contained in the vaccine crossed over to the blood-brain tissue, signaling the immune system to actually target the brain-blood vessels for destruction. These two cases of autoimmune vasculitis offer clear neurobiological evidence to explain why there have been so many deaths, permanent neurological disabilities, incidents of seizures and loss of consciousness, and encephalopathy due to Gardasil. And after discovering a biological association between the human papillomavirus antigen and the vaccine and the conditions that most likely caused the girl's sudden deaths, Dr. Tomanovich wrote to British medical authorities about her findings. The letter response she received back was appalling. It stated that the health officials in the UK had already made up their minds, irrespective of any science, about its safety, and no further research would be provided. Dr. Susanna Garland at the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne published a study in the peer-reviewed journal Obstetrics and Gynecology showing, quote, a higher rate of congenital abnormalities in infants were noted in pregnant women who received the vaccine, end quote. A second study, according to Christina England, found slightly higher fetal deaths and rare cases of central nervous system malfunctions and malformations in neurotube defects in vaccinated pregnant women. Such studies confirm the seriously flawed nature of the clinical trials conducted by Merck on Gardasil. They also speak of the dangerous conflicts of interest present in the FDA's approval process, in which the agency receives millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical cartels to expedite vaccines and drug launches despite having limited data of their efficacy and safety. In conclusion, from the start, a vaccine against the human papillomavirus was completely unnecessary. Aside from the unreasonable health risks that come with this vaccine, Gardasil is also the most expensive recommended vaccine on the market, $150 per injection, and three are required. If this vaccine becomes mandated for school attendance, how are underprivileged people and the uninsured to come up with the money? And as funding for government programs dry up, does this make any sense to allocate state health dollars to vaccinate Medicaid-eligible girls with Gardasil instead of using that money for something that actually might benefit them? India banned the human papillomavirus a year ago due to vaccine-related deaths. France no longer permits advertising for Gardasil or Cervarix. So why hasn't the FDA, the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, or Merck itself responded to the reports of Gardasil as not being a safe vaccine? The argument, which is the same defense used by all the drug companies and the governmental agencies against any adverse reaction to any vaccine, is that since the federal system uses voluntary, passive reporting, it does not prove that a sudden death problem or even death occurred after vaccination was in fact caused by the vaccine. The only causal relationship acceptable to the powers that be are that those that result from scientific studies, but these are often unacceptable to the rest of us, since the majority of these studies are funded, controlled, manipulated by the pharmaceutical companies and their scientists for hire. So the fix is in. What can any injured child or concerned parent do in the face of this hard line? Should they be required to set up their own scientific study? Obviously, neither Merck nor our government are willing to spend money to prove that vaccines such as Gardasil are dangerous. It is simply much more easy for them to simply go ahead and vaccinate and deny all responsibility. I'm Gary Nall. That's our in-depth original commentary and report on Gardasil. Following that now is a piece from Shane Ellison from the peopleschemist.com. It's entitled Herd Immunity, Three Reasons Why I Don't Vaccinate My Children and Why Vaccine Supporters Shouldn't Care. Parents who choose not to vaccinate their children are often chastised and stereotyped for putting their own kids at risk. But what is even stranger than this assault on individual freedom and informed choice is that these concerned parents are attacked for putting vaccinated children at risk. These attacks are based on the theory of herd immunity. This hypothesis was plucked out of an old college textbook. It states that the more people are immune to an infectious agent, the less likely an immune-compromised individual is to come in contact with it. In other words, herd immunity serves as a human shield, a type of immunity for at-risk individuals. But remember, it's only a hypothesis. When outbreaks arise among children, health officials are quick to state that it's due to a breakdown in herd immunity. Doctors parrot it too, without ever looking at the research. They say it's happening more often nationwide as states make it easier for parents to opt out of vaccines. Like argumentative apes, pro-vaccine parents and their physicians start pounding their chests in favor of such statements. They use them to attack anti-vaccine parents, accusing them of putting vaccinated kids at risk due to the breakdown in herd immunity. Well, this is fuzzy logic, and it's borderline stupid. After all, if vaccines truly worked, then why would vaccinated kids be at risk? Plus, the spread of infection isn't limited to coming into contact with another person. You can get sick without ever seeing another individual. Herd immunity is nothing more than a silly catchphrase used to scare and bully parents into vaccinating their kids. Vaccine exemption forms in all states are not the answer. Parents should question vaccine safety and efficacy. Instead of using an unproven hypothesis to question parents who have opted out, pro-vaccine parents should be questioning the safety and efficacy of vaccines. With doses of vaccine being forced on the public, some healthy skepticism could go a long way towards raising a vibrantly healthy child. My background as a medical chemist taught me to rely on proven science. I learned to be less sensitive to emotional arguments and more sensitive to facts supported by reproducibility. This is one of the main principles of the scientific method. It refers to the ability to test or experiment something so that you can see if it's accurately reproduced. As a parent, I have a responsibility to use my training to make decisions for my family, especially when it comes to potentially dangerous vaccinations. In my own research, I have uncovered facts that every parent should be aware of. Here are three. 1. Vaccination does not always mean immunization. Vaccinations and vaccines are purported to work by triggering the body's natural immunity. By injecting weak or dead infectious agents through our skin, it's believed that the body will create the appropriate immune response. They are even called immunizations. And while this idea is over 200 years old, it's not nearly as effective as the pharmaceutical companies and doctors and government agencies want you to believe. At best, vaccines boost our defenses only temporarily. That's because your immune system is programmed to recognize and attack invaders that come through the biological front door. That could be your nose, your mouth, and your eyes. It does not work properly when you shove an infection by needle into the arm. The World Health Organization underscored this fact in their report entitled Immunization, Vaccines, and Biologicals. They wrote, quote, children under 2 years of age do not consistently develop immunity following vaccination, end quote. Not only does this weaken the immune system, it renders many vaccines ineffective. Now, an example, and he goes into measles, mumps, rubella, that the people getting the diseases are the ones who were fully vaccinated. And number 2, vaccines expose kids to toxins. According to a fact sheet put out by the Center for Disease Control and the FDA, vaccines are brimming with toxins. These include dozens of chemicals, heavy metals, allergens, and including monkey kidney cells and aborted fetal tissue. Formaldehyde is just one chemical found in vaccines. Quote, according to the FDA, excessive exposure to formaldehyde may cause cancer. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. How about antibiotics like neomycin and polymyxin B and streptomycin? These are drugs that aren't even improved for uninfected children. Here is what the DBT has been found to cause: sudden infant death syndrome, anaphylactic reactions, cellulitis, autism, convulsions and seizures, brain dysfunction, low muscle tone and strength, nerve damage. And vaccine supporters will insist that the benefits outweigh the risks. Really prove it then. And number three, kids can build immunity naturally. We are all at risk from various biological microorganisms. Invisible threats are everywhere. A single gram of feces can contain more than 10 million viruses, 1 million bacteria, 1,000 parasite cysts, and 100 parasite eggs. The goal is to minimize risks by increasing our immunity naturally. Those are his thoughts. Now, here are some individuals that I have pre-recorded for their thoughts.
So the issue then rests entirely on this concept of herd immunity, this idea that very large numbers of people must be vaccinated or there is no protection. So at the point that you debunk herd immunity, then the house of cards comes tumbling down, because the whole idea of the legitimacy of vaccine mandates rests on herd immunity. When you are mandating a serious medical intervention to healthy children, knowing that some portion of them will suffer harm, sometimes catastrophic harm or even death, then you're talking about a serious moral issue. The morality of requiring somebody to get vaccinated to protect others must be weighed against the morality of requiring healthy children to get a serious medical intervention that can cause harm or death. Most people don't question herd immunity. They take it as gospel. And the reality is that immunity from vaccines is temporary. Sometimes it's as few as 3 or 4 years. And so if there really is herd immunity from vaccines, then there should be thousands and millions of adults that are succumbing to infectious disease, because adults are not required to receive vaccines and boosters the way children are. The legal justification for mandatory vaccination dates back to 1905. That's the Supreme Court decision in Jacobson versus Massachusetts. What most people don't realize that it was just about a single vaccine for smallpox. And the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the mandate in the event of a legitimate public health emergency. So we're talking one vaccine, and it was only for adults. It did not apply to children. Today, if you use Jacobson versus Massachusetts to support the legitimacy of vaccine mandates, then you need to ask whether the Supreme Court really had in mind this idea that we would be mandating upwards of 45 doses of 13 vaccines, as is the case in New Jersey, to children. During a time that there is no legitimate public health emergency. The bottom line is that a responsible universal vaccination program in this country has to have three components. You have to have independent, impartial, rigorous science. You must offer free and informed consent, real choice, and there must be corporate accountability. Until people are able to sue vaccine makers for injury and harm and death caused by vaccines, there'll never be real justice when it comes to the vaccination program in this country.
The HPV vaccine, Gardasil and Cervarix, have had unbelievable marketing behind them. The push for them, the One Less campaign, was a really smart campaign on the part of the drug companies. You know, it really played on parents' fears, and it even spoke to the children themselves that they'd be one less if they didn't get the vaccine. And in fact, the vaccine's never been proven to reduce cancer, to reduce cervical cancer, the cancer it says it's going to prevent. One of the reasons is it takes, 20 to 30 years to develop cervical cancer from a lesion. And the post-surveillance was just a few years. So we don't even have enough time to see. That's one thing. And it received a fast track. Fast track should be for something, an emerging pandemic. We don't have an emerging pandemic of cervical cancer in this country. On the contrary, the cervical cancer death rate in this country is the 17th leading cause of cancer death for women. 17th leading cause of cancer death for women in this country, not second. And that is the marketing tool. What you'll hear on the part of the drug companies and public health officials is that cervical cancer is a second leading cause of cancer death in this country. But that's just not the case. That is the case in certain third world countries where there's no Pap screening. We have Pap screening. And by the way, if you think that you'd be fine with a HPV vaccine and avoid Pap screening, your risk of cancer would go way up. Because again, Pap screening has been shown time and time again to reduce cervical cancer. It has reduced cervical cancer deaths in this country by 70%. And we have no evidence whatsoever that the HPV vaccine can counteract or prevent cervical cancer. What we do see now are a few cases of cervical cancer in young girls, teenagers, where there never was before. And what we're hearing from the drug companies is that they were probably exposed and that the vaccine could possibly potentiate the virus if you've gotten it, received it once exposed to the HPV virus. The problem with that is the antigenicity studies show that the antibodies last less than 5 years on average. While it covers a few strains, there's only one strain present at the five-year mark. We don't know how long that lasts. The other two or three strains are gone by 2 or 3 years in girls and less than that in boys. So if the recommendation is boosters throughout the life, but if you've already been exposed and you receive the vaccine, it could potentiate the virus, then we're dealing with a vaccine that's probably going to be causing a whole lot more cervical cancers than it ever saves.
There have been numerous reports of serious autoimmune reactions affecting the nervous system in girls following HPV vaccinations. And for the most part, the medical regulatory agencies and the health authorities have dismissed them as being coincidental and completely unrelated to the vaccine. But the fact is that the reports of adverse reactions are increasing in numbers, and there is now over 60% of adverse reactions reported for HPV vaccines alone in the U.S. Vaccine Adverse Reaction Database, VAERS. There is over 60% of serious adverse reactions, over 60% of all deaths, and 82% of cases of permanent disability in females under the age of 30 associated with Gardasil. In the UK, the rate of adverse reactions from Cervarix, which is another HPV vaccine, is 24 to 100 times higher than that of any other vaccine in the immunization schedule. In Australia, there is over 50% of adverse reactions reported that are attributable to HPV vaccines. Now, in addition to that, there are numerous case reports and studies in the scientific literature that show that HPV vaccines are associated with serious neurological outcomes and autoimmune disorders. The medical health authorities have by large dismissed all these reports as coincidental and unrelated to the vaccine, but I have done so without any adequate investigations.
That was Dr. Lucia Tomanovic, preceded by Dr. Tony Bark and Louise Habakas. I'm Gary Knoll. I want to thank you for taking your time to listen to this special presentation from our Public Health Investigative Reporting segment on Gardasil, a dangerous vaccine. The full report and the article with all of its footnotes are posted on progressiveradionetwork.com. Thank you very much for listening. Now we're going to our talkback segment of our program, your opportunity to call in and share your thoughts, comments, points of view. 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Be happy to take some calls now. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on the line. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, to put, again, the punctuation mark on what you were just going over, when I got up this morning, my email box was flooded with emails from your audience addressing this new Monsanto Protection Act, the H.R. 933 provision that the president signed. and people are just reeling with anger. So basically what it does is that it just protects Monsanto.
That's all it does. It's
from doing what they're doing.
I would not be angry. I would simply, because it was all so predictable. The president, the Congress, the media, the federal agencies, they all work together and not on our best interest. So what we will be doing is simply educating more Americans. That's the answer. More people should be watching Seeds of Death and reading the articles of what's wrong with genetically engineered foods. Shopping. Don't just listen to the program and be angry. Go out and shop for organic rather than, how many people do you think, Luann, weren't you counseling someone that I asked him what it was that he was trying to prove by arguing against you, why everything you suggested he do, he said, give you a reason why he couldn't. And then I asked him, how long have you been listening to the show? A long time. Well, then what part of the show are you actually actualizing? And he's, why, I guess nothing. I'm just an intellectual, so I just intellectualize. I feel that doesn't help anybody, doesn't do anything. So what you do is when you stop eating junk food and you stop listening to their programs and you stop buying their products and shopping in their stores and putting money in their banks, that's the answer. There'll be another round in about 6 months. At that time, we hope to have at least one state in the United States that has a referendum to label genetically engineered food in that state. All it takes is one. So we've got 49. We lost in California. We learned a lot. We got 49 more times to succeed. Anything else?
Well, that's it. Okay. I have more, but I'll save them for tomorrow.
All right. Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David.
Hello, Gary. It's David Combs here. I sent you an email with a bunch of URLs in it. Your story about Monsanto, it appears on the net, if you Google. It appears only on health sites and nature sites. It appears in Not Truth Out or Common Dreams or any of those places that we progressives watch. My question is, and if you don't know the answer, surely, is Monsanto so powerful that it is able to get to those sites too?
No. No. Those are very legitimate and credible sites. We put out almost one or two original articles per week, and a lot of them are carried by those sites, but not all of them. So what we have to do is we have to keep sharing it with everyone on our list. So if you share the articles against Monsanto that Richard Gale and I wrote, and you start pushing it out to the people you know to get them interested, then that makes a difference. We don't have to rely upon a single site. We can rely upon all of our networks, and that's how we should do it. Okay? One last quick call. Peter from Glenville. Peter, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Glenn Mills, PA. I have a question. What do you do about a daughter who has already gotten away at college on their own, independent, the Gardasil vaccine? No current symptoms, but what do you do to reverse the problem that could happen?
There are protocols, including getting in the hands of a qualified homeopathic physician, medical doctor, who can use detoxification methods, chelation, zeolites, homeopathics, to rebalance the body's chemistry. You can get over a lot of the vaccine's adverse effects, but it's a holistic homeopath that is the person I would go to. All right, we're out of time. Let's say hello to, and thank you all for your calls. Let's say hello today to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. Well, we're continuing our symposium, our People's Symposium on Education today. We had a great start yesterday, and we will continue the discussion because ultimately we'll be taking a look at the issues and questions that are painfully evident in the current national crisis in education.
We look forward to it. Utrice Lead coming right now on the Progressive Radio Network.